has a number of lodging facilities and everything from an idle movie theater to a roller rink.
The city of Adak may find new life supporting offshore drilling. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 25th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, war vets discover healing on a fishing trip in Bristol Bay.
I've been so many places in the world, and this is the most awesome, most awe-inspiring and life-changing scenery I've ever seen in my life.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Doyon Limited, celebrating 40 years as Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years.
And by
Grant Station, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com.
Oil and gas development in the Arctic could bring some major changes to the city of Adak. An agreement announced last week paves the way for development of the former military base as a support hub for offshore oil drilling. KUCB's Stephanie Joyce has more.
When the naval base on Adak shut down in 1997, so did almost everything else in town. From a peak of more than 6,000 permanent residents, the population dropped to just a few hundred. Ownership of the Navy's considerable infrastructure on the island passed to the Aleut Corporation, and most of it's been vacant ever since. But that might be about to change. Last week, Offshore Systems, Inc., a marine supply company with ties to the oil industry, and the Aleut Corporation, announced an agreement to collaborate on repurposing the former base for use by the offshore oil and gas industry. Spokesperson Jim Butler says Adak is made to be a support hub.
It has a significant fuel storage capacity. It has in excess of 400,000 square feet of warehouse space. It's got runways, large runways that allow for, you know, heavy cargo planes coming in and out and passenger vessels. It has a number of lodging facilities and everything from an idle movie theater to a roller rink.
Many of the facilities have fallen into disrepair, but Butler says that's not the immediate focus. He says for now, the goal is simply to get the word out.
I don't anticipate a lot of improvements, if you will, to existing facilities until those are being done in a way that actually meets the needs of prospective clients.
Those clients could be Statoil or ConocoPhillips or Shell, any of the oil companies with leases on the Outer Continental Shelf. Butler says OSI and the Aleut Corporation didn't enter into the agreement with a specific company in mind. Rather, he says, the partnership is intended to signal the potential for development on Adak.
The agreement, principally, is talking about the different resources, if you will, and skill sets that they bring to help utilize the facilities that are currently at Adak, and if the opportunity presents itself, to try to provide expanded services beyond what's already there.
That description may be vague, but it still got Adak City Manager Leighton Lockett excited. He says this is probably the most serious proposal he's seen for repurposing the military facilities on Adak.
I think the community is still trying to digest what this all means. But I think anything that grows the community and you know, promotes the development of the community and utilization, you know, is a positive thing. And I don't think that as a community we're, you know, looking to turn anybody away.
But Lockett is realistic. He doesn't see Adak competing with more developed ports like Unalaska, at least not in the near future.
You know, we hope that we can be complementary and, you know, serve, you know, in some capacity that, you know, Unalaska may not be able to. You know, we certainly want to be able to help so that we all succeed and that we grow together.
Shell Oil is expected to start drilling its first exploratory wells in the Arctic later this summer. ConocoPhillips and Statoil are hoping to start exploration on their leases next summer. In Unalaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
Lightning was active across the central and southern interior region of the state this weekend, with more than 2,000 strikes on Saturday alone. The Alaska Interagency Coordination Center reported 17 new fires on Sunday. KUAC's Emily Schwing has more.
Heavy lightning over the weekend ignited several smaller fires north of Denali National Park. Those small fires have merged into a larger blaze known as the Bear Creek Fire No. 4. Alaska Fire Service spokesman Pete Buist says it covers between 18 and 20,000 acres.
Things are still very dynamic. We've got a number of fires down between Nenana and the park on the west side of the park's highway. And still don't know what sort of acreage we've got, but it's going to be in the thousands of acres. It's put a lot of smoke across the highway. We had pilot cars escorting people through last night.
Buist says the park's highway is currently passable and that several agencies are working together to make sure it stays open. Several remote subdivisions and roughly 100 structures are in danger.
We've done some preliminary talking to people and suggesting that maybe they should be thinking about packing up, but there are no mandatory evacuations yet.
Difficult terrain is hampering the efforts of firefighters to gain access to the blaze. They're using water-scooping aircraft and fire retardant to combat the fire from the air. Smoke jumpers have been deployed. If the weather stays warm and dry, officials expect the fire will continue to grow. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
The Alaska Fire Service says a fire burning near the village of Allakakit is 43% contained. The blaze covers more than 2,700 acres. Fire Service Public Information Officer Nan Floyd says it's tentative, but crews hope to have the blaze fully contained by the end of the week.
Primarily, the south portion of the fire has more line securing that needs to happen, and we'll take care of over the course of the next couple of days. We've had a change in weather. It's become a little bit cooler.
Crews are pushing to get the fire under control as others around the state start to demand more resources. Allakakit locals have been helping to fight the blaze since it started at the local dump last week. The U.S. Army vessel Monterey left Kodiak for Seward yesterday. Army Reserve Major Anne-Marie Daneker says the 174-foot landing craft is now under the supervision of the Naval Sea Systems Command, and all but two of the Monterey's crew have flown home. The Monterey hit a charted hazard off the city of Kodiak on June 8th and was intentionally beached on Puffin Island in front of the town. About 8,000 to 12,000 gallons of diesel fuel spilled from two ruptured tanks on the ship, but no damage to the environment or harm to wildlife was reported. The stay in Seward is expected to last 32-45 days, where repairs to the hull will be made. Monterey's 350 tons of cargo, construction equipment destined to help relocate the western Alaska village of Nutok, will be loaded on the landing craft Malvern Hill out of Tacoma. The Associated Press reports that construction of buildings at the new village site of Murtarvik, scheduled for this summer, has been canceled. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, celebrating Nulukatuk in Barrow.
Everything given to us is prepared from the heart and soul and shared. A lot of love is put into it too.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Meridian Management, specializing in coordination and management of all phases of construction projects from vision to completion, working to ensure that your project is on time and on budget. More at meridianak.com.
The legislature has decided that regulating alcohol should no longer be the job of the Department of Public Safety. The Alcohol Beverage Control Board was transferred to the Department of Commerce in a bill Governor Sean Parnell signed earlier this month. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
Seen primarily as a source of revenue since statehood, the board was housed in the Department of Revenue until Governor Frank Murkowski moved it by administrative order to the Department of Public Safety. That was back in 2003. Anchorage Republican Mike Hawker sponsored the latest move, saying the new executive spot in Commerce addresses some important issues. He says alcohol needs regulating for administrative, licensing, and compliance activities.
All three of those need a balanced approach in managing the industry. Under the Department of Public Safety, it was purely a law enforcement standpoint, and there was a lot of difficulty for the industry in managing the ongoing routine business activities of administration and licensing.
Hawker says the duties of the ABC board will not change with the move. It'll have the same functions dealing with an industry where most of the vendors are legal. He says the Department of Commerce will reflect a more appropriate balance.
When you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. When the agency was housed in the Department of Public Safety, every alcohol vendor looked like a potential criminal who had not been caught yet. And that was just the wrong way to approach a legal industry, you know, albeit an industry that has its problems.
It's really a step backwards in the effort to improve the health and safety of this state.
That's Matt Felix, the executive director of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence in Juneau. He says the industry's interest in moving the board comes after just a few years of heightened law enforcement efforts. And he says those efforts were showing positive results in controlling some of the biggest problems of alcohol misuse.
It was obviously a dumbing down of the ABC board and their effectiveness as a regulator of the industry. And that's what the industry was after. And there was no need for it. They're fairly toothless as it is. The statutes are old and out of date. And the liquor industry had its way.
Felix says before the move, the board had the weight of the entire public safety establishment to motivate enforcement efforts. Under Commerce, he doesn't anticipate the same success in controlling misuse of alcohol. Anchorage Republican Anna Faircloth voted against the change, saying her final decision came down to the improvements she's seen in alcohol misuse. She thought there was a positive effect in the direct relationship between law enforcement and the industry's managers. As a former director of the Standing Together Against Rape Crisis Intervention Center, she said she's cautious about moving away from law enforcement. As for the future, Faircloth says it's now up to the legislature to make sure that law enforcement has the resources it needs to continue the good work it's been doing.
The Alcohol Beverage Board knows that we're watching. You know, it wasn't a unanimous decision by the legislature to move it, and we're going to be watching, and we want to make sure that, you know, there is no reduction in enforcement and that the communication remains high between public safety, between commerce, and between the people that have licenses to sell this particular product.
Walker says he's already discussed with the governor the option of moving the regulation back to public safety in the event the move proves to have negative effects. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Project Healing Waters and the Bristol Bay Native Corporation sponsored 8 recovering veterans and injured service personnel for a week of fishing at the Mission Lodge on Lake Aleknagik. KDLG's Dave Benninger was along as they fished for king salmon on the Nooshigak River.
Come on, baby. Y'all. Yeah, he's a big fish.
Woo! Good thing.
He's running again, boy. I love it when the rod's bent double.
Staff Sergeant Brent Allen and his wife Crystal are fishing for king salmon on the Nooshigak River. They and 6 other recovering veterans fished for a week in Bristol Bay with Project Healing Waters, a group that has been teaching wounded veterans and injured service personnel the art of fly fishing since 2005. Healing Waters is a unique form of physical and emotional rehabilitation, and last year more than 3,000 recovering veterans took part. Another participant is Kathleen Coy. She's still on active duty and has been fishing with Healing Waters since coming to Alaska 2 years ago.
Fly fishing has changed my life. I mean, it really has. I would have never thought tying a tiny little fly would be so therapeutic, but it really is. And then just getting out there and catching fish, and it doesn't matter what size fish it is, it has been an amazing experience for me.
The Healing Waters participants fished out of Mission Lodge on Lake Aleknagik. The Bristol Bay waters they fished are considered one of the world's premier sport fishing destinations. On Tuesday, the group flew down from the lodge to a spot on the Nooshigak River some 20 miles from the bay. They swapped fly rods for beefy bait casters, better to land the river's kings with.
You didn't even give me 5 minutes to get the camera out.
Smart, sweetheart. I can't help the fact that I got a fish on like immediately. I mean, what do you want? What do you want?
Staff Sergeant Brent Allen and his wife Crystal came to Alaska with the U.S. Air Force. Brent's vocal cords were permanently damaged during 2 operations done to repair injuries in his neck. He says it's difficult to breathe, swallow, even speak. But with king after king on the line Tuesday, any pain seems scarcely able to temper his enthusiasm.
Come on, buddy. Come on, every guy.
He also landed the biggest catch of the day, a 33-pound female.
I've never seen fishing this hot. I've salmon fished the last 2.5 years that I've been here in Alaska, and I've never seen fish so aggressive. It's absolutely amazing.
Crystal left active duty a few years ago. Tuesday was the first time she had ever been fishing. Her first fish in her life was about a 12-pound king salmon.
I came here to fish. I fished and I conquered, and I'm ready to go home and say I did it. It's like a honeymoon he never thought he'd have.
That's my kind of honeymoon, I'm going to tell you that.
Kyle Volberding was their guide on the river.
They do a lot for us. I just think it's great to see him out on the water, especially in this area.
A week of guided fishing out of a Bristol Bay Lodge like Mission runs up to $7,500 per person. The majority of the sponsorship came from the Bristol Bay Native Corporation, the new owners of the Mission Lodge. This is their first major investment back in Bristol Bay since 1979. Inez Webb is the administrative manager at BBNC.
One of our directors came up with an idea to have the grand opening. Find participants from the Healing Water Project, bring them to the Mission Lodge. It was a great time. A lot of camaraderie and good conversation, good stories.
For the rest of the week, they flew and boated to some of the hot spots the region is famous for, like fly fishing for rainbows on the Agulhawak River. It probably goes without saying that this is a long, long way from Iraq and Afghanistan and other places these men and women have served. Another veteran on the trip is Frank Blanchard. He was medically discharged from the U.S. Army and has been fishing with Healing Waters for a few years.
Yesterday, I caught my first salmon ever in my life. Today, I caught two salmon, and I would have never imagined that I was able to do that. I was dreaming last night about salmon. I couldn't go to sleep. I was up till midnight, and I was up at 4 o'clock this morning, and the fishing was just phenomenal. I mean, we just kept pulling salmon in, and they were so beautiful. I've been so many places in the world, and this is the most awesome, most awe-inspiring, and life-changing scenery I've ever seen in my life. I wish I could bring all my brothers and sisters in the military out here to see what I'm seeing right now.
Reporting for KDLG, I'm Dave Benninger.
Tune in tomorrow for a story on how Healing Waters transformed one soldier's life.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
A Kodiak High School alumnus will be vying for a spot on the U.S. Olympic track and field team tonight. Trevor Dunbar, an All-American sophomore at the University of Oregon, will compete in the 5,000-meter preliminary this evening. Dunbar was the 25th qualifier for the 25 places and had been on the bubble until Saturday. The Anchorage Daily News reports Dunbar is in a field that includes Galen Rupp, who won Friday night's 10,000 meters, and Alan Webb, who holds the American record in the mile. Dunbar will compete in the first of two heats, which begin at 6 p.m. Alaska time. They will be broadcast live on the NBC Sport Channel. Two other Alaskans are competing this week in Eugene. Jordan Clark, a shot putter from Anchorage, qualified Saturday for the finals by finishing eighth in the preliminaries, and Janae DeLoach, who went to Eielson High in Fairbanks, is a favorite to make the U.S. Olympic team in the long jump. Conference attendees in Anchorage last week defended a controversial Small Business Administration program. About 280 people attended a National 8A Association conference in Anchorage to learn more about the program that helps small businesses compete for federal contracts, but has come under increasing congressional scrutiny in recent years. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
Consultant Barbara English of Gainesville, Florida, worked for more than 30 years as a federal procurement officer. Now she advises small businesses on ways to win federal contracts. She gave a talk on how to use the federal procurement data system, which lays out agency contract types and amounts, to research opportunities. Responding to critics who say the SBA 8A program gives too many advantages to Alaska Native Corporations, or ANCs, Native American tribes, and Native Hawaiians, she says it's working just as it should.
I am so incredibly impressed with the ANCs that I've met here. And what's very clear to me is they're adding a whole lot of value to the taxpayer and to the federal agencies that are awarding contracts to them.
National 8A Association President Ron Perry says program critic Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill is serving her constituents. Boeing operates multi-billion dollar federal contracts and is Missouri's second largest employer, but he says she isn't considering the needs of Alaska Natives. Arizona Senator John McCain has criticized Native corporations, saying they're not passing enough of the SBA 8A profits on to their shareholders. But Perry says the corporations do share benefits by offering cultural programs, jobs, and scholarships.
By educating, taking the time, putting the dollar revenues into education of our young people, and this generation for that matter, you now know that armed with that knowledge or additional knowledge, you can choose paths that you didn't know existed before. So by putting food on the table, it could be in the form of education, which allows you to better where you're at, which allows you to better your job, which allows you to make better decisions financially and personally.
In 2011, 50-some Alaska Native corporations sold about $6.8 billion worth of goods and services to federal agencies. That's about 1.3% of all federal contracts. Earlier this year, a Government Accounting Office report said the Small Business Administration needs greater oversight of the 8A program, and a $20 million scandal involving a Native corporation heightened concerns. The SBA had already put new regulations and reporting requirements in place in 2011. Alaska's congressional delegation says Congress should wait for those to fully take effect before making any more adjustments. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
This week, communities on the North Slope are celebrating their final whaling festivals, or Nalukituk. Each of the captains who successfully catches a whale, either during spring or fall whaling, hosts a giant gathering for distributing the meat. APRN's Ann Hillman attended a Nalukituk in Barrow last weekend.
Elders and families arrived early on a chilly Barrow morning to stake out their seats in the dusty makeshift arena. A wide ring of high, white plastic walls block the wind and are lined with benches, camp chairs, and coolers. Martha Stackhouse sits with her family, bowls ready for the first round of soup.
Our culture is Inupiaq, and we are whalers, first of all. That's the main thing. We are whalers, and we've always been whalers from the past, and we still carry it on even today.
Stackhouse and others explain that whaling occupies the entire year. The Inupiaq hunt bearded seals in the summer to make skin boats, which they then use to hunt bowhead whales in the fall. Winter comes, and they distribute whale meat during Thanksgiving, Christmas, and other feasts. In the spring, they use the boats to hunt whales again and start to distribute meat during Nalukituk. The captain comes on the microphone, and the festivities begin.
All right. What a beautiful day. Thank God. Praise the Lord.
The festival starts with the whaling crew and captains gathered in a circle to say a prayer.
Happy goodness, don't give up. The airline, keep going, keep going, keep going.
The prayer is followed quickly by the first round of food, duck and caribou soup.
All right, find a partner and we'll start serving. Yeah.
Rebecca Brower says the day is about being together.
Because everything given to us is prepared from the heart and soul and shared. And a lot of love is put into it too. Yeah, joyous occasion. Yeah, and the preparation time takes a lot of preparation, and it can get costly as well, financially costly, but they don't worry about that part.
The whaling captains and their families provide food to feed hundreds. The captain calls out the numbers that adorn the walls of the arena, guiding servers to community members who haven't received any yet. And they don't just give food to eat right then. Every guest pulls out boxes of Ziploc bags to be filled with whale meat, fruit, cake, and other delicacies. They pack their coolers with whale to supplement their diet until the next feast.
Okay, don't forget number 10.
In addition to massive chunks of muktuk, which is skin and blubber, people also serve...
Mikyuk is, it's muktuk from the whale and meat from the whale and the tongue. And you mix it with the blood of the whale, and you put a little bit of sugar, and you keep on stirring it every day, and they serve it at Nalukutak.
A group of kids eagerly explain what's coming next. People devour plates of the fermented meat and blood. They describe it as sweet, tangy, or earthy. After their stomachs settle a bit from hours of eating, 12-year-old Sadie Brower says they participate in the blanket toss.
The blanket toss was used in the olden days to look out in the ocean for seals and stuff.
Now it's done in celebration.
It feels good, but once you go on, your heart will start beating, like you'll get scared. And then once you get used to it, you'll...
The blanket is made of thick skin sewn together with rope loops around the edge. Ropes from each corner extend over a 6-foot-tall wooden post and are firmly attached to the ground. Groups of people pull out the edges of the blankets as individuals climb on. The taut skin propels the jumpers 10 feet into the air or more.
Get up!
Talented jumpers do backflips. Others just try not to bounce off the blanket onto the ground far below. The festivity extends into the night and finally ends about 12 hours later at midnight with Eskimo dancing. Men beat handheld skin drums and sing as groups of people, from elders to toddlers, dance. They bend their knees and stand in place, making different arm movements. Together, they rejoice in the bounty of the hunt and celebrate who they are, the whalers. In Barrow, I'm Ann Hellman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Ann Hillman from Barrow. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Audio engineer, Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services has over 70 job openings available statewide in nursing, social work, and child protection. There's nothing more important than protecting the health and well-being of Alaska families, so take the first step towards a meaningful career. Visit dhss.alaska.gov and click on Careers. Join their team and make a difference every day. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. The grocery store meltdown. We've all seen it. Harried and frustrated mom, tired toddler in full tantrum mode, and out of nowhere comes a young stock clerk. Drops to his knees next to the screaming child and starts rolling cans and making funny noises. The diversion works. Distracted from his tantrum, the toddler stops crying. Mom takes control and finishes her shopping. Families are stronger when others take an interest. This message sponsored by Best Beginnings, Alaska's Children's Trust, and Strengthening Families Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.